let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. A Striving After Wind Part 1 by Sharon Traynor is the story of a family who leaves their affluent lifestyle in New York City to live on a farm in the Upper Mississippi Valley near Dubuque, Iowa. The family saga, written against a backdrop of the political and global turmoil of the last 3 years of the Vietnam War, 1970 through 1973. Sharon grew up on a farm in southeastern Iowa, married Mark in 1972 as the Vietnam War was ending. However, Mark enlisted in the U.S. Coast Guard, and his first assignment was a buoy tender on the Mississippi River, billeted in Dubuque, Iowa. They fell in love with the splendor of the Upper Mississippi Valley as they camped and explored the area from Dubuque to the Twin Cities. The Coast Guard then sent him to technical training at Governor's Island in New York City. They lived there for 6 months. He was ultimately assigned to an icebreaker, Homeport, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where they have lived ever since. A large family, both natural and adopted children, a retired nurse whose first love has always been writing. Sharon Traynor, author of A Striving in the Wind Part 1, is our guest on This Week in America. Sharon, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
I love what you've done with this story. So fascinating. And as I'm reading through the bio and reading through the story, you moved from Dubuque, Iowa to New York City. Did that provide some of the inspiration for writing this book?
Yes, as you can imagine, in 1973, Mark and I got on an airplane in Dubuque, Iowa, and landed in New York City. The contrast was startling, of course, for two kids from Iowa. And from that, the idea of my book started taking seed in my head.
When did you start writing this book? When did this idea become, okay, I've got this great story, I really need to begin putting this down on paper? When did that start for you?
Oh, pretty quickly. I worked at Sloan Kettering Cancer Institute in New York City. In fact, it was across the street from our apartment. And I took care of a young woman who was pretty far along in her pregnancy, but had serious cancer. And I worked the night shift, and I would go into her hospital room and talk with her. And she was in a really bad way because her husband wanted to abort the baby to try to save her life. But of course, that wasn't going to work for her anyway. So that is the beginning of the story. That's what happens to the mother in this story. And that's what sets this this whole situation yes. into place. And that's how my story started. And almost immediately, this plot of the story started growing in my head. And a few years later, I started actually writing it on paper.
The book is A Striving After Wind.
50 years ago now.
I was just going to say, the book is Striving After Wind by our guest on the program, Sharon Traynor. It took a while to write the story, and I know life gets in the way sometimes of doing these things. Talk about why it took so long and the perseverance that you decided to finally finish the story.
I had a large family. I would write a few chapters, a few pages, and just throw it in the drawer and let it lay for a couple years, and I'd get it out again because it was always in my mind. I was always thinking about it. I knew how I wanted the book to end, so I knew the beginning, but so actually I did write the end of the book first, and then everything after that had to build up to the ending. But after I finally did get the whole thing written from beginning to end, I went to the library and got the literary guide. Years ago, before we had internet.
Oh, yes.
That book listed all the publishing houses in North America. And I found 10 companies that would accept unpublished authors with the genre of story that I had written. So I boxed it all up, whatever they asked for, you know, the first 3 chapters, the first 100 pages, whatever they asked for. I got that, you know, ready and sent it off to 10 different places. And every one of them returned it to me unopened. And that was one of the most heartbreaking
oh, I can imagine,
experiences
yes.
of my life. And at that point, I've just put it aside and said, oh, okay, this isn't going to work. I can't do this. But eventually, I couldn't put it aside any longer. I kept working on it. And then I realized that even though I thought I had a pretty good story, I really didn't know how to write it. So at that time, it was possible with my family situation to start taking some classes at UWM, joined writers groups, critique groups. I did all of that. And I realized that it's true. I didn't know what I was doing. So it was probably lucky for me that no one had opened any of those folders of information I sent to those publishing companies, because then I reworked it totally from beginning to end, used, you know, the information, the things that I had learned at school, and rewrote it. And by that time, we were to the point where self-publishing was an option, which, of course, you know, that's a fairly recent, maybe what, the last 15 years or so?
Yes, yeah, where it became popular.
Yeah. So then I was able to publish it, self-publish it, and hold the book in my hand, which was one of the best moments of my life. And so what I did is, Milwaukee, my part of my neighborhood in Milwaukee, has a lot of these little freestanding library books, library.
Oh, yes, I love those, yes.
You know what I'm talking
about? Exactly, yes.
And so I went around the neighborhood and stuck my book into these little,
great idea,
little freestanding libraries. And a lady tracked me down who was a retired editor, proofreader. And she said, Sharon, you have a good book here, but you still need some serious editing. So she and I worked on it for the whole summer. I redid it again. And I decided that I wanted a more professional looking product. So I went with Outskirts Publishing, which is also self-publishing, but they help you a lot. They help with the editing or the formatting and all of that. So finally, here in what, 2019, it's done. It's as good as it's going to get. I'm done with it now.
Well, you've nailed it. And the book is basically, we're talking about on the program today, A Striving After Wind Part 1 by Sharon Traynor. Also, A Striving After Wind Part 2 is available and obviously extends the story. Why did you decide to publish in two parts?
The first time I published it, it was like 600 and some pages. It was the whole thing. And I was told, in fact, a retired literature professor from Marquette read it. And he said, Sharon, you have a good book here, but people do not have appetite for 700 page books nowadays. So he suggested that I would publish it into two parts. Because I even had a lady who told me that she loved the book, but her hands were so arthritic that it hurt her to read such a big book. So I thought it would be better to publish it in two parts.
Our guest on the program today is Sharon Traynor, author of the book of Striving After Wind, Part 1. We're talking about Part 2 is also available. I mentioned the plot a little bit and the characters. How were they impacted by the Vietnam War? In particular, with the end stages of that as you're writing the book, how did the war play into the plot?
I think that there's not a lot of books out there, a lot of that talk about what it was like for us at home during that war. That, you know, Walter Cronkite coming on the TV every night at 6 telling us, you know, the casualty numbers and all of that. And then we were waiting, all the riots and stuff that was going on the college campuses. I wanted to incorporate all of that in my book. And the book starts, like I said, in 1970, and I needed it to go to 1973 when the war was over. And it particularly impacts one of the boys in the book, and it has to be central. During those years,
yes,
it was a central very, most of us baby boomers that were in our teens and early 20s during that time, I think it was a very pivotal time in our life. It impacts us, I think, even still today. So I wanted this book to, there's a lot of influence by the war in this story.
Well, yes, and it just like in real life during that period, it was dividing families. There were conflicts in families. You mentioned Mac, one of the sons, and his father, and their differences on the war. All of that is so well developed. In fact, all of the reviews talk about the strong character development that you had. Is that an appealing part of the story as you were writing it, to make these strong characters relatable characters, because they went through struggles that so many of us did during that period?
Yes. Yes. You know, people change, circumstances change. And I love that I had enough time. You know, like I said, the book is lengthy, but the metamorphoses that these characters went through, I mean, they start out as being wealthy, arrogant, spoiled, pampered children, to never have worked for anything in their lives, to be supplanted into this new situation where they had to get up every morning, learn how to work, learn how to accomplish things for the first time in their lives. And it was a rocky road. It was hard. It was difficult for these characters. And they slowly evolve into people that are probably more likable, more attractive, more acceptable. But I tried really hard to make it make sense, to be believable that people could change like this and ultimately have a good end to the story.
And that's such a powerful part of the story, is this transformation that we see people go through. The book is a Striving After Wind, parts 1 and 2, Sharon Traynor. If you're Googling, that's Traner. Book available at Amazon, the usual places. Go to our website and get all of the information in the book there. I mentioned that this, now you can focus on your first love, which is writing. What other books have you written?
I recently published another book called Texas Ice. It's about a kid who falls in love with hockey. I have 8 sons. Most of them played hockey. I have grandsons that play hockey now. So we're very much a hockey household. And this is another fiction book, not nearly as involved or epic as the first ones, but it's been received pretty well. It's selling pretty well. And now I'm working on my third book, which is going to be a Civil War story. And it's going to tell about a Confederate kid, an 18-year-old kid, James Hanger, who was the first amputee of the war, who ultimately went on to make prosthetic legs. In fact, Hanger Prosthetics is a global powerhouse in prosthetics still today. And then on the other side of the coin, I have a Union colonel who was from Milwaukee, who was actually arrested by his Union commander for not returning slaves to their owners during the war, which seems hard to believe, but yes, it's true. And he ultimately undergoes an amputation, a battle amputation. So in my book, these two lives are going to be intertwined, and it's quite an undertaking because of all the research that's involved. I thought I knew something about the Civil War, but I'm learning a lot more with my research.
Well, I was going to ask you about research, and that has to be overwhelming once you start getting into it and finding out, okay, I thought I understood this, but wait a minute, I never knew this before. And yeah, incorporating all of that into the book. When do you think that will be available?
Probably next year sometime. It's going to be called The Bone Pile.
Interesting. I hope we have a chance to talk about that. The current book is A Striving After Wind, parts 1 and 2. I want to talk about the writing process for a second. You have all of these characters that you develop so well. You've got the circumstances that are dramatically changing in their lives and in the country during this period, 1970 to 1973. Did you know where you were going with the story when you started? Did you have a strict outline, or did things sort of evolve? As I'm almost thinking these characters probably took on a personality of their own as you were writing them.
Yes. You know, I've had people comment at the beginning of the book that seemed like there was, the family's quite large. There's 10 kids. Back in the 70s, we still had these large Irish families.
Yes.
And
yes.
And then they go, oh, each one of them was so clearly defined that they had no difficulty keeping track of who was who and what was doing who what. But you know, I knew where this story was ending. I knew how I wanted it to end. But you have to support, you know, everything. You have to track all these changes. And I had to have enough plot to fill up 3 years because it needed to go from 1970 to 1973. So there's these subplots, these family intrigue, you know, the rivalries, the difficulty that any large family like that's going to have. And then the between, you know, the, how people felt about the war, how they, you know, interacted with each other because of the war. So that had to be carefully constructed. And like I said before, I wanted it to be believable, to be logical. And the people that have read it, people that have gotten back to me, were very, very satisfied with the progression of these characters.
You've done such a nice job with this. The book is A Striving After Wind. Part one is the book that we're talking about, but part two is available as well. You find it at Amazon, the usual places. There are probably people listening that have thought, like you, I've got this story to tell, but then you have other things that come in, and that's not at the top of the priority list. What would you tell them that they have a story, they would love to write it, but they really don't even know where to begin this process? What advice would you give them?
You know, for me, it was like I'm constantly in my head. I like this book that I'm writing now. When I'm driving, you know, down the street, I'm just, it's uppermost in my head. And yes, I come up with some really good ideas. And a lot of times it's just little parts of the plot that you write. And then later you have to go back and connect it to make it all make sense. But, you know, if you have this thing inside of you that, for me, writing is like breathing. I have to write every day. It's been that way my entire life, whether I was journaling or I was plugging away on my book, whatever I was doing. So, you know, if you have that inside you, just keep at it and keep at it. But I've read some books that were self-published. And I think that you know, you need help. A lot of people, you think you know how to write, you know about the point of views and you know, you have to incorporate your smells and your touches. You have to do all of that. But you know what? If you had the time and the wherewithal to take some classes and learn how to write your story, I found that to be one of the most helpful parts of this whole process. You know your story, but maybe you don't know quite so well how to write it.
It's interesting. Just reach out and get help. And so much is available online and in libraries. Yes, where you went to find this information. What did you discover about yourself as you went through this process of writing the book and then publishing? Because that's a whole different area to publish. Writing is one thing. Now you've become a businesswoman and you're working on the publishing aspect of it. What did you find out about yourself during this whole process?
I've learned that writing really is my passion. I love it so much, and it's such a central part of my life. And, you know, why turn your back on something like that? Why not embrace it and do it? Because it gives you so much joy and it's so much fun, the research and the writing. And then you sit back and you read what you wrote and you go, man, you know, that's not bad. That's pretty darn good. And, you know, do it then. Just do it and accept help, accept criticism. You know, people are willing to help you and to give you input. And for me, that's, I guess I'm not very, what's the word? You know, I need people to say, yes, it's good.
Well, yes.
I need need to be bolstered by that positive influence, you know. So I'm glad I did it. I'm really glad that I was able to do it. And the journey was a long, long journey, but it was worth it in the end. And I would tell people that if that desire inside of you, just go for it, just do it. And you're going to, it's such a self-satisfying process, and I'm very happy with it.
Well, and well, you should be. And advice, I'm sure, if it takes a few decades and that's your passion, go ahead, follow it. That's what you went through, and the results are there. And the book's so successful, excellent reviews. The Striving After Wind, Part 1, Striving After Wind, Part 2. Both are available at Amazon, all of the usual places. Sharon Traynor, our guest and the author, T-R-A-N-E-R. Sharon, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program. Congratulations on a job so well done with both parts 1 and 2 of A Striving After Wind. Keep on writing. Hopefully we'll have you back to talk about the next book. Thank you for spending some time with us on the program.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
It has been our pleasure. Sharon Traynor, author of A Striving After Wind, Part 1, and A Striving After Wind, Part 2. You'll find both available at Amazon. Links on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.